I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network, and we are going to celebrate independent bookstores this hour. From the Boswell website, Boswell is a great independent bookstore here in Milwaukee, comes this sentence or description of the day. Independent Bookstore Day is a one-day national party that takes place at indie bookstores across the country on the last Saturday in April. At Boswell, they will have the usual eccentric limited edition items. Welcome to the Night Vale on vinyl record, and a literary map of the United States, which is a really neat thing. I like that idea a lot. They'll have special events, and we'll talk about them with Daniel Golden, who is our guest in our Milwaukee studios this hour. We love having Daniel here. He has spent the weekend, bless his heart, reading Janesville. We haven't received it yet, but we will soon, so I'm anxious to hear his review of that. He's got a whole stack of books. He's going to be giving you book recommendations. And, you know, it's a time of change in the bookselling industry. There are a lot of big books now. There are people who read books, ebooks, and, you know, to my taste, it's great to go to an indie bookstore and read a book. But they do so much. The number of events he has planned for this week is unbelievable. He's got a book club and really has done tremendous outreach to the community. So we're absolutely blessed to have Boswell here. It's a terrific independent bookstore. And if you know Daniel, you know that he brings everything to great life, and then some. So he's with us. Hello, Daniel.
Hi, nice to be here.
I described you as effervescent during the billboard. Isn't that a good? That's how you are, though. You're effervescent.
Well, I usually do get a mocha before I come in, so I might be a little more effervescent.
I know you like coffee.
Try me around like 8:30 at night at the end of the event, and I'm drifting off.
But we got your email at 5 o'clock this morning. Were you up all night reading? For heaven's sake, do you sleep?
It's sort of like going on a plane trip. I get, as my mom would, well into her 80s, would get a little panicky and wake up very, very early because you don't want to miss anything. So I'm like, well, I have to be there at 2. So I have to get I have to double check the list and
Daniel.
Make sure everything's okay. I don't want to mess up.
Oh, and you did read Janesville for a good portion of the
week. I did. I get to have, we did not have any programming yesterday. And so I did read Janesville all day because I feel if I don't read some serious nonfiction before I go on the show, I am not, I'm doing you a disservice.
Oh,
and
Daniel,
like, la la novels, la la. or, you know, when I do read nonfiction, but I do read like kind of, there's a few, actually it's pretty much half and half on this list, but there are some books where sometimes when you read nonfictions, they're so niche, they're like, oh, there's nobody to read this book but me. I don't even know why we have it. And sometimes we have to special order it in for me. So, but in this particular case, Janesville is a book that's obviously a great recommendation for people who are listeners to Wisconsin Public Radio. I listened to the show last week that you have with Matthew Desmond, and I got very excited about an ongoing theme that I've been doing, what to read after Evicted. I think we have mentioned Evicted on like the last four shows.
I think we have two. I know, but then it got a Pulitzer.
Well, then whenever we don't mention it, if I go on with somebody else, they mention it. So that's right. It won, did it win one of the National Book Critics Circle Awards too, and a Pulitzer and a Carnegie Medal? I mean, it's all that it deserves. And
yes.
I think actually when it, you know, the first round of prizes come from the National Book Award, and when it didn't win that, I was like, oh my gosh, how can it not win the Pulitzer? I mean, like I'm knowing what's going to win the Pulitzer. But the truth is that all prizes are actually a very small group of people make the decision. It's judges. The difference is the Pulitzer is vetted, which is why there was one year, a number of years ago, where there was no Pulitzer for fiction because the panel did not take the selection. But these were pretty both fiction and the general nonfiction, Evicted and Underground Railroad, were good choices. They were our runaway bestsellers for Christmas, actually. Both
really?
Of them. They were selling. And, you know, we're a kind of quirky store, so it might not be at every store. But for at least for our store, it was, you know, they were sometimes running 2 to 3 times ahead of the number two book.
Mm-hmm. So what makes this stand apart? There have been a lot of books. Hillbilly Elegy, there were a lot of books that are looking
at
Crumbly
too,
America.
Actually.
I did, too. I love that book, too. What makes this different?
Well, I looked at a couple of different things. I mean, I What it has in common is that Amy Goldstein is a very good storyteller. And I do read a lot of, I guess I'd call them current events or maybe sociology. Mm-hmm. Though she's more of a journalist. Journalism might be a more appropriate, or sociology might be more appropriate for Matthew Desmond, who's a sociologist. But she's a very good storyteller. And so she has – her story is about the hollowing out of the middle class through – one factory, the General Motors factory, but a number of spinoffs, because all the parts makers, Lear, which made the seats, and the delivery people, you know, how it affected the Janesville and Rock County market. She does look at some of the other businesses there. There's one chapter of Parker Penn, the rise and fall of Parker Penn, which was also a Janesville staple. And one of the things that was very interesting to me is until this time, even though they were made two major cities in Wisconsin, you would normally think a county would work together, but because Beloit and Janesville were both pretty strong markets, they definitely didn't work in tandem. So she follows a number of families who lost their jobs at both General Motors and at Lear, and then looks at the social service people, the people running Rock County 5.0, which was their redevelopment program, the people who ran the Parker Closet, which secretly gave out things to health and beauty aids and clothes to kids in need. And she just does a really great job. There's more characters in Evicted. But it wasn't really that hard to keep them straight. One of the families, the husband decides to commute to one of the other plants. So it's a story. There's this whole community of people at other General Motors plants, especially Fort Wayne, that actually kept their jobs, but because they had such tight communities where they were from, decided not to move. And so they do these massive commutes and how that affects the family. A lot of the book's about retraining and how it is possibly, in terms of these economic changes, it might be the only program that has bipartisan support. But at least when you finish this book, you start wondering, how effective is it anyway? So just terrific.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah.
I'll definitely read it. Let's go back to bookstores for a moment before we go through many of your other books. I can't believe, and I'm wondering if you do this so that people will come to the store or if you just do this because you want people to meet authors, but what you do as a bookstore, I don't know how you do it. You don't have a huge staff, and you're bringing in people almost every day of this week, big authors, to arrange that must be a little bit exhausting when you got to run a bookstore too, isn't it?
Well, you must be the master of the Excel grid, and that's important. And also you have to, everything has to be, though lots of people do things, you really have to have somebody controlling the list in the end. Otherwise, you're going to be going off in different directions.
Right.
And that drives some people crazy because we can't always say no. Sometimes we say no right away. We know what things we can do and from experience what things are just not going to work. But sometimes it's a maybe, and that usually means we'll see. And obviously some things you have to jump on with some of these larger tours, because if you don't jump really quickly, someone else is going to take the event. And not only do you have to jump, but you sometimes have to – I actually had this morning, a very major kids author, very, very major. If I told – I can't I feel like I jinx it saying who it was.
Don't say it.
But, you have to drop everything, because I have been given dates. And if I don't have everything lined up a week later, it's in another city.
Goodness.
I mean, it's not even in it doesn't move to someplace else in Milwaukee. It's in St. Louis or Cincinnati or something like that. And so, you have to, I know that if I make this work, I'm going to have a whole, close to 1,000 really, really, really happy people. But like I said, there are many. If you heard the list, I can talk about the people who we lose. And sometimes you do everything right, and you still you don't realize that you're in the sort of the fighting it out stage. The other thing is they're all different kinds of logistical issues. And of course, there's a competition, because not only does every city and every bookstore want to do events, but there are all kinds of other people do. Now, of course, if we lose an event to somebody who winds up at a theater going through a producer or something like that, that's fine. Milwaukee still got it. Or Milwaukee or Wisconsin. I mean, we just hosted, oh my goodness, we had an author last week, who was that author? It was like within the last 2 weeks. Oh, it was Andrew McCarthy, the director, the National Geographic writer, but it was also the teen heartthrob. And we had people come from Madison. We had people come from Green Bay. We had people come from Appleton. We had people come from Iowa for that event.
Are you serious?
It was, no.
Because he's a teen heartthrob?
Yeah, little. It was a lot of women. You know, it was more couples than I expected, but it was a lot of women of a certain age.
Remarkable.
Pretty in Pink, Mannequin. He was actually in the Joy Luck Club. He was in Weekend at Bernie's. But then he's gone on to this really wonderful career as a director and also writing for National Geographic. Such a smart guy. Mm-hmm. And this was a book called Just Fly Away. It's not on my list, but it's on my list now. I read it. I can talk about it.
Sure.
He actually was writing it for years as an adult novel about a guy who has two families, has a secret family, and he was just completely stuck. And literally, I think he said 8 years. And he started writing from different perspectives, and he fell in love with his daughter. And he wrote the whole book in 2 months. You know, it was like, it like went, once he found the voice, mm-hmm. and, you know, having acted in so many teen heartthrob movies, he certainly knew how a young woman's voice sounded. He did a really good job. And we, you know, so it was his first novel, and it turned out to be a YA novel. So that's one of those things where, you know, we asked people who hadn't been in the bookstore before, and we think at this point we have all these events, all different kinds of things, and it still felt like 80% of the people had never been in the bookstore before.
Really?
So that's the thing. It's like we feel like we have a nice store.
Yes,
and
you do.
You do these events to find different audiences, and even if a tiny little percentage discover it and say, a lot of people go, well, you know what? I actually buy all my books online, or I use an e-reader, or I only use the library. I'm here, you know, I run a bookstore, but when I'm talking to you, I'm talking about the insides of books. Mm-hmm. And but sometimes that some people will like the experience enough that they'll come back. And that's, you know, so that's just the business plan of a small business.
And the store is doing well. I mean, you're staying alive. You're growing.
We're growing. we're doing fine. Yeah, we're doing okay. So it is a great time of great change, and I feel like there are any number of things. It's very hard to predict the future because you just don't. You're dealing with so many models, like, and we're always at the mercy of whatever else is happening in the market. You know, what other stores open up? What happens to the economics of books themselves? And, you know, what happens to our neighborhood? You know, so now I know I was just following a store I really love. I've never been. It's one of those stores that I think about going to all the time. And I've actually looked at flight plans. It's called a Watermark in Wichita. Hmm. Really smart owner, Sarah Bagby. One of my ex-colleagues from Schwartz actually went to work there when her husband transferred. And actually their co-owner lives in Milwaukee for some reason. So, they've moved a lot. You know, but we used to move at Schwartz more. You know, we've just been very lucky that we found a space that works. We found, the landlord's happy with us. And it's, you know, is it the perfect location in Milwaukee? I'm not sure what the perfect location is that we could afford. It probably isn't the most central. You know, that lake gets in the way.
Yes.
It's central for fish. The fish, you know, if the fish could go on land, they would be convenient to do all their errands.
They would indeed. Well, it's congratulations to you. I know how hard you work. You really do. I forgot to tell you at the top of the hour, if you want to join the conversation with Daniel, please call. He's got a lot of books that he's going to recommend for us this hour. He comes laden with books. He's got a whole
and sheets
thing.
More. Yeah.
And sheets, he's got information galore. So if you want a recommendation for a book, we'll go through some of these. Some are nonfiction, some are fiction. And here's how you reach our conversation. He is the owner of Boswell Books here in Milwaukee. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're delighted to have Daniel here. So after Janesville, if you were going to follow Daniel's advice, and this is nonfiction again, I've heard about this book, but I don't know very much about it. It's Live and Let Live, A View of the River West Neighborhood here in Milwaukee.
Yeah, it was published by University Press, not a local one, but, you know, and And actually, the author teaches at Rhodes College, which I think is in Memphis. Hmm. But she did grow up here, and she wound up doing her, much like Matthew Desmond did, she did her field work in River West over several years and followed... I think she talked to about 60 people, and I apologize in advance if I got that wrong. Looking at a neighborhood that has been relatively integrated and stably integrated for more years than people expected, and sort of what are the very, very special nature of this community? Can it be replicated? You know, what are the things that work about it? A lot of it had to do with negotiations infrastructure, like graffiti, and how you deal with people breaking, like running, car repair in the alley. Some things had to do with how you treat development. You know, you have a number of different things, because it's not only, it's got an still has the older community. It's got it is Black, Latino, and white. It has people who are more educated living there, and very much it acts as a buffer between Harambee to the west and the east side to the east. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoyed it a lot, and I think as a person, I think somebody would, because I think most cities have these kinds of neighborhoods, but we don't, you know, it's a special, maybe a countercultural past, but it's really a lot of different people trying to negotiate and collaborate to make the neighborhood stable. Mm-hmm. So,
and the thing is, Milwaukee doesn't have many neighborhoods like that, Daniel.
No, that's true. That's true. And I mean, I think Sherman Park has tried to be a neighborhood like that, and obviously it's had it has some struggles. It also has a different personality. You know, there's people who say the Bayview is like River West without the politics, and maybe without the level of integration. It depends what part of Bayview, but you know, I think it's just there's just a lot of interesting lessons in the book, and I really enjoyed reading it. And she does a good job with the people. I mean, it is a little more of an academic book than Evicted, which is sort of his trade edition of a book that came before that. Sort of, I mean, like, he wrote his academic book. This wasn't his tenure book. I would say in Evelyn Perry's case, this is her tenure. Like, this is her tenure book, and she got tenure. Hooray! So. But you know what? Thank goodness for those books. Thank goodness for those books.
Daniel Golden is our guest, and we're celebrating Independent Bookstore Day, actually, which is this Saturday. He's going to have special events at his store, and we'll talk about what those are going to be and move through many of the other books. There are novels on this, too. We tease each other because I read very few novels. He always gives me my vacation reads, because that's the only time I have to read novels, which is too bad, because I like to read novels. There are many good ones on this list, and we will get to them and get to your phone calls as well. Our number is 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Twitter is @KDunnShow. And this is the Ideas Network. Daniel Golden is our guest this hour, 800-486-8655. Before we go to phone calls, another book, and then also tell us what you're doing on your celebration on Saturday. Please.
Well, what every bookstore is doing around the country, and there are, I know Books and Company at Conowoc is participating, a number of Book World stores in Wisconsin, plus definitely Book for Murder in Madison, and Arcadia and Green Green. We all buy custom, book-friendly, fun, limited edition things that you can buy, such as the vinyl. There's a exclusive and original little booklet from Michael Chabon. There is tea towels with quotes on them. There's a little stuffed plush reading. There's a onesie and a little plush. We don't take any holds. We don't take any phone orders. We don't take any email orders. We don't take any Twitter orders or Facebook orders. You have to show up at the store, because it's a celebration of the physical space. And then later on, if they don't sell, then you can do whatever you want. Okay. But it's sort of to give it – it's much like Independent Record Store Day and Comic Book Day. I think Comic Book Day might give the stuff away, but record store, it's like record store day. Then we're doing a story time with a celebration of a really beloved picture book writer who just passed away, Amy Krauss Rosenthal. You might know her because she had this incredibly popular New York Times Modern Love column about trying to find a new mate for her husband after she died.
Yes.
And a lovely, you know, lovely person, lived in Chicago. We didn't know her very well, but we all our friends in the industry did. And so one of our friends in the industry, Robin Hoffman, who is a bigwig at Scholastic Book Fairs and, you know, helps pick the books and does presentations and things like that, she's actually going to do the story time at 11 with some of her favorite Amy Krauss Rosenthal books. And I believe that's happening at a number of stores around the country. And then at night, we're celebrating our 8th anniversary,
Happy birthday.
Woohoo!
Ooh, yeah.
With an event with Liam Callanan. He and I are going to be in conversation. Liam has been a very good friend to the store. He teaches at UWM. He's run the creative writing program. He's run the English department. And he wrote the essay for a collection that came out a number of years ago called My Bookstore. And it is just out, they decided to release it in paperback about four years later. It was a little while. There are about 5 stores that went out of business. So they added, they kept them. They just asterisked the essays. And then there's 5 new stores. The thing that really, I didn't do it when in hardcover, but I thought, well, I'm going on Kathleen Dunn. And I said I was going to read everything that I put on my list.
Oh, dear.
So I had missed a few essays. And I went, actually, it was kind of interesting to do it. Because I was wondering, like, when you put it all together, you take these writers, large and small, what do they really love about their own bookstore? And sometimes it was their own bookstore. And sometimes it was a bookstore 500 miles away. And the thing that was very interesting is that it was the people. That was the thing that was so... The people at the store. That's what the... You know, it's all about connection. And so when people come to the store and say to me, well, I have a bookstore in town, you know, or 5 miles away or 10 miles away, but it's not, you know, it doesn't have as many books as yours and it doesn't have this section and it doesn't have this display. And I think you really just need to get to know somebody there, because they're reading just as much as I am, or just as much as Jason or Amy or Jane or, you know, or Peter or Chris or whatever, Sharon. Mm-hmm. You know, you find your own Sharon,
right.
And you can fall in love with a bookstore of any size. The thing that people won't know when they're reading it is that a lot of those, while they make a big deal of the bookstores that close, a number of them actually either sold or the person they talked about is gone. So, reading between the lines, I knew how much bookstores can change because a lot of those people weren't there anymore. I will say, I would use this as a travel guide. That's what my dream is, like, use this and you run around the country, and when you get to the store, you have them sign it or something like that. And, you know, so it becomes like a memory book. I love the they had this person do illustrations of each store, and I really love those. I wish I could get that image for a t-shirt or something, because they did a nice job.
Nice.
So
let's go to some phone calls for you, Daniel. Liz in Madison. Hi, Liz.
Hi, Liz.
Hi, Liz.
Hi,
Liz.
Thank you so much for the nice segment. So I am a school counselor, and I was wondering if I could get some recommendation ideas for a book that would be good to read with adolescents about mental health. And it's particularly on my mind because Netflix released their series based on the young adult novel 13 Reasons Why.
Right.
And there's been a lot of discussions about how can you use literature or media to tell appropriate stories to children about these topics. I will say that I also have read everything that John Green has written, and
sure,
I really appreciate his voice. But when I think about something like Looking for Alaska, his first book, I still think that that falls into a little bit of a trap of kind of over-dramatizing the mental illness and the death of the young person. So, I would love to get your thoughts.
Oh, and that, you know, that's one of those things. It's not exact. It's kind of a catch-22, isn't it? Because to get the general population of teens and young adults to interested, you go a little over the top. But by going over the top, if you don't go over the top, then it makes the book a little more boring to the lay reader. I know that there's another film adaptation. I think there's Nicola Yoon. I think her book Everything Everything has some mental illness issues. I read the last book by Jennifer Niven, the second book. But I know that her first book, All the Bright Places, had some a character dealing with suicide. The second book was more about a physical problem that somebody was having. There are some good lists if you scope around. The John Green one was, yeah, that's a good one. But yeah. Really, one of the nice things about YA is they really hit all kinds of that's part of it. That's part, you know, unless you're reading like pure romance or pure fantasy, that realistic YA is always trying to chase that. So I would suspect that any if you wanted more suggestions, if not a bookstore, then also like the teen librarian at your library will have read, because nobody reads faster. We have Kelly is our librarian in training, and boy, does she read fast, and she could probably go on for about 20 minutes about this. I think you'll find some other people, but I guess I would try look at the Nicola. Did you read that already? Everything?
I did not, no. Yeah.
And the other thing is your kids will know it too, because like I said, I think it's opening soon as a film.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks, Liz. Pleasure. Thanks so much for the call. Phil is next. Hi, Phil.
Yes, hello there.
You're in Iola.
Correct.
Thank you for calling. Hello.
Okay, can you hear me?
Absolutely.
Yeah, we're all good.
We can hear you.
Okay. My comment on youth, the rumor was in the past that kids would stop reading or weren't reading as much. I work as a volunteer for our local car show in Iola in the campground, and one morning I had numerous calls to jumpstart cars that, you know, the batteries were dead, and I found out children were sitting there reading the newly released of the Lord of the Rings all night.
No, that's funny.
So I thought, hey, there's some hope in the world here. So that's it.
That's great.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. Thank you. We always like to hear about hope in the world, right? Let's go to Rich in Rhinelander. Hi, Rich.
Hi. About 4 years ago, I was coming back from California from a visit to my sister's, and the pickup point for my ride was going to be Boswell Books. So I think it was in June, around June 13th or whatever, I wandered into your bookstore, and you had an author reading David Nirenberg from a book titled Anti-Judaism, the Western Tradition. And trust me, this is not an easy read or light reading, but I sat down, and I was absolutely fascinated afterwards, went up and talked to the author. For a good 5 or 10 minutes or so. I mean, he was just the most engaging person. So I want to give a thumbs up and also a recommendation to people who live closer in and can go to the bookstore, that if you're passing up these author events, you're really missing some life-changing events. At least it was life-changing for me.
Well, I want to add that there are some really great programs going around the state. There's a big book festival going on in Green Bay, just amazing, going on. I mean, they have Sherman Alexie and Margaret Atwood.
Wonderful.
And of course, the Wisconsin Book Festival does a fabulous job. I mean, if I was just living in Milwaukee and not running the program, I'd probably be going to Madison to go to events there too. Mm-hmm. I usually have to skip because I have something else I have to do.
You've got events going on.
But
I'm with you, Rich. There is something, I just love the atmosphere, and I love the people who are sitting listening to the author and what you learn and the question and answer. It's a little community, and it's a great way to spend some time, isn't it?
Yes, thank you. The author and I had shared some thoughts about Eastern Europe because our ethnic background is Lithuanian, and many people know that before the war, Lithuania had 250,000 Jews, and after the war, it had 5,000 surviving. Mm. And so we had some really heartfelt remarks to make to one another about what happens when societies go haywire.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Rich. Thanks so much for your call. I'm glad you stopped in, Boswell. Back to books. Mary Gordon, there's a big name. This was a big book, wasn't it? All the Light We Cannot See. Last year or 2 years ago?
So it's not that book. So this was my response to World War II novel overload. Yeah, All the Light We Cannot See, about 3 years old, just came out in paperback. Then you have Nightingale by Kristen Hanna, which comes out tomorrow, and that's another World War II book. There's Lilac Girls on the bestseller list, another World War II book. There's Jessica Shattuck's The Women in the Castle, another World War II book. And so I said, we've been just having this kind of crazy discussion of the Chris Klieb book that I've recommended here, Everyone Brave is Forgiven, another World War II book. And when, you know, and especially with Klieb, who was writing contemporary novels, and he went back and wrote a historical, he said, I'm going to write a World War II novel. And we were like, why World War II? And I think partly it's because it's a war where we're clear about maybe who's right and who's wrong. At least on the European front, we get it. On the Asian front, because they bombed us. Right. And I think because there are so many stories, and because of many people's ethnic backgrounds, a lot of these people are writing about, you know, telling family stories. But I thought, enough of this. We need another war, and, you know, to write about. And so I read the Mary Gordon, who's coming out on May 9th.
She's coming in the store,
about a week after that. But yeah, she's definitely coming. She actually is probably doing Madison. She has Madison connections. So she tends to not come every time, but she's in Madison with some regularity. And I wound up reading her new book called There Your Heart Lies, which is about the Spanish Civil War. And it is both contemporary and historical. Mm-hmm. So it follows this woman when she was young, from a wealthy Irish family, who decides to go off and volunteer for the war effort, like many people did. She goes with her deceased brother's lover, I guess, and they go into a arranged marriage, like a marriage of convenience, you know, because he doesn't think he'll be able to serve as a doctor openly. And then at the same time, there's a contemporary story with her being around 90 in Connecticut and living with her business partner and her grandchild as they kind of confront some domestic issues. But it's a very interesting take on the Spanish Civil War. And what I found very interesting is that many of the problems that were the anti-Franco people dealt with, actually you can see duplicated on the left right now. So I found that interesting, like the different, like, do you, and I'm sure you can actually say this is actually duplicated on the right as well. Do you make change first, or do you win the battle and then make the change, or does the change have to be there before you win the battle? It's like I think for any political philosophy, that is always the continuing issue, and I liked seeing it play out on a historical level.
I like that one. I think I'd like to read that one.
So you might.
Yeah, good. This is a big booking for you, Sheryl Sandberg.
Yes, it is probably it's certainly our biggest booking of the spring. I sort of fell off my seat when I was told. And of course, then, you know, as I said, I've gotten used to the idea that you get something and then it doesn't really happen. So I was just so excited when it came together. She's going to be at the Pabst Theater on
Pabst Theater,
oh, big space.
Yes,
on Monday, June 5th. So the tickets are through the Pabst, not through us. You know, this is the complications of booking. Pabst and the Pabst Riverside people have tons of things going on. But if I get a Monday night, I'm more likely to be able to get something because people don't go out on Monday, so they don't tour. That's usually a down night concerts and comedy and things like that. It's turned out to be a huge success, actually. So people are very excited to hear her. Her book's called Option B. She wrote it with Adam Grant, who is a wonderful self-help writer. As you know her from Facebook and you know her from Lean In. Mm-hmm. But what you also may know is her husband died very suddenly.
On a treadmill, on vacation.
Yes. That is right. He had been left, like, not only that, he was alone and he died and he was alone, and they didn't know how long it was, so she had all this guilt that maybe there was something she could do. And the book is basically about what to do when, you know, life deals you an unexpected hand. So I found it very useful in the way she tells people how outsiders, how friends and family can deal with somebody's grief and help them on track, like what, almost like an etiquette guide, like what should you do, what you shouldn't do. Because I think, like many people, I tend to be scared away. So many people who have things go through them, a cancer diagnosis, a sudden death, a bankruptcy, you know, any number of things, losing your job. And instead of getting all the support, they get everybody kind of disappears because they're afraid to say the wrong thing. I think it's going to be a very interesting talk. It's with it's in conversation with Jane Hamilton. Jane has done a number of conversations with us, most recently Ann Patchett. And Patchett also in her store does lots of conversations. And this gave me the idea because I went to a conference because I had to find somebody. They were doing, sometimes they're working with business people, sometimes with nonprofits, and I was trying to come up with a pairing, and I saw Ann Patchett in conversation with Leslie Stahl.
Really?
And I thought, well, since Jane is, I bet if nothing else, if Jane's afraid, she can ask Ann for advice. But I thought, I heard, you know, everybody just always loves, she's just so great at it, Jane Hamilton, that I thought this was actually a perfect match. And, you know, I was, and they were really happy with
great,
it too, because how
great.
Could you not fall in love with her? And, you know, and it's really great because The Excellent Lombards, her novel, is just out in paperback, and it might be my favorite Jane Hamilton novel to date.
Is it?
Yeah.
What's the name of it?
It's called The Excellent Lombards. I call it, we have a book club program that do a flyer and I speak at various places. And I call the little segment about Jane Hamilton and Ann Patchett apples and oranges. And, you know, the two things that aren't supposed to go together. But in fact, Jane Hamilton's is about an apple orchard. And Ann Patchett's book, Commonwealth, actually starts off with a family living in California among orange groves. It has oranges on the cover, beautiful oranges on the cover. But they're actually both very similar books in that they're both have autobiographical elements about confronting change in family. And I think they'd be wonderful to read together.
Excellent. Daniel Golden is our guest, and we're taking phone calls for him. He has more books he's going to be recommending. Independent Bookstore Day is this Saturday. They're celebrating at Boswell. And give us your – we have a website or something? You have a web, I know, that has all the information.
BoswellBooks.com. Yeah.
Okay. So join our conversation. If you have books to recommend or if you need a recommendation from Daniel or if you didn't catch the title, we're happy to give that to you again. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And we are on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. Okay, this is the Ideas Network. We mentioned Matthew Desmond winning the Pulitzer. Daniel, you have some other books here, and you've mentioned some of the prizes that they've won. We'll get to the books in a moment. Is it a big deal to win a prize, and what prize do you want to win? Does it mean increased book sales right away, or you just feel better about yourself because you're acclaimed, or what?
It does really depend on the prize. It's the prize and the book together. So, for example, the Man Booker, which is a big British prize, does sell books sometimes, but if it gets too Britishy, too satirical, too edgy, then it doesn't sell as many books. One of the reasons why Paul Beattie's most recent book did so well, I think, is because it was the first American book to win the Booker Prize, as the sellout is the – oh, my goodness. The sellout is the prize. A lot of prizes, the National Book – the big three here are the Pulitzer, the National Book Award, and the National Book Critics Circle Award. This year, La Rose, which is Louise Erdrich's novel, won the National Book Critics Circle Award. I was a little taken aback because – I didn't think it was getting as much attention as The Roundhouse, which won the Pulitzer for she won with the last novel. Mm-hmm. It didn't seem like it was showing up on quite as many best of lists. But remember, as I said, three people, five people. There's not that many people on that judging panel. But then right after she won the National Book Critics Circle, she turned out to be on the shortlist for the Penn Faulkner Award, which is also a very nice prize. She did not win that one. And I don't know if I can pronounce this right. Behold the Dreamers by Imbolo Mbuye won, an African writer. One of the things that I find is that prizes are really important because there are so many books in the world that people want credibility.
Sure.
You know, that's a plus. They get a lot of media attention that way. But, you know, so right now there's a shortlist for the Bailey's Women's Prize, the International Dublin Prize, which is used to be called the Impact Dublin Prize. So one of the interesting things about prizes is most American prizes are named after foundations, so they tend to not change their names. But you think that we're the people who are all commercial, all advertising all the time. It's the British awards that are all corporate sponsored.
Really?
And their names are on the prize. Ah. Yes. So in fact, the Mann Financial Services Organization sponsors the Mann Booker Prize. Booker is also a company. They don't sponsor anymore. In that case, they didn't get rid of the name. The Orange Prize, which is now the Bailey's Prize. Orange was in a telecom company. Bailey's is the liqueur.
Yeah.
And they have just gotten ended funding, so it's going to be called either the Women's Prize or whatever, the Mattel Prize, the Stonyfield Farms Prize. I don't know. I'm trying to – I think they're just a – they won't probably name it after that. The same thing, the Impact Prize was named after I think it's an American logistics company or something, and they withdrew their sponsorship, so now it's the International Dublin Prize. That prize is a very lucrative prize. It's £100,000.
Ooh.
And it is run by the Dublin Public Libraries, but it's a real library-driven prize, much like the American Library Association prizes, the Carnegie, and because it the libraries around the world actually submit their nominations, and then the board does it. That prize hasn't been given out. Next week, the Edgars and I think the Agathas, which are two mystery prizes, are being announced, and then there's the Nebula Awards that are the big science fiction prize. Hmm. It's, I don't know, it's fun. It's, you know, it's the closest we have to like an Academy Awards,
right,
or something like that.
Right.
Only we seem to have like 30 of them. So, you know, it's just like there's another prize. We do have a case of prize winners, and I have to say people love it, and I rarely see that in bookstores, but I don't know why. Every bookstore in the country should get rid of one of their cases and put a prize winner case because it is very successful.
Let's go to Lucy in Summit. Hi, Lucy.
Hi.
Hi. Go right ahead.
I wanted to mention a book. You were talking earlier about books that take place in the time of a particular war.
Oh, yes.
And I just read a book called News of the World by Paulette Giles, Giles. And it takes place shortly after the Civil War. And it's just a wonderful book. An older man is traveling through Texas. He lost his printing business during the war, and he's now going around and in these small Texas towns renting taverns or halls or whatever and reading from the newspaper in all these places. And this is people's entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
And he runs into some soldiers who have a white girl who was recaptured from the Indians, and they ask him to take her to her family.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the story of their relationship and this journey they make.
It's been recommended by either you, Daniel, on another show, or Nancy Pearl, or
I think
I've
we were talking about it together.
Did you?
And Nancy
yes.
Pearl said yes. She liked the other book about that character when he was younger, and my bookseller, who read both of them, said, no, The News of the World is better. But she wasn't on the air, so she couldn't say it. I'm saying it now. they're both excellent. Has been a huge, not only a bookseller favorite, but also like a word of mouth. You know, we had somebody come in at Christmas. Earl bought, I won't say his last name, bought 20 copies to give out to friends.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes, he picks a book. He is a beloved reader. And, you know, that's the recommended book. And I do actually feel like, for one thing, I'll tell you why I think you would like the book. Lots of history.
Mm-hmm.
Not that long.
Mm-hmm.
Well written, not that long. Not poetic, simple stuff,
mm-hmm.
but very much an interesting take on mm-hmm. Reconstruction and what happens in a political vacuum.
Mm-hmm. Great. So. Well, yeah, I need to read more about Reconstruction. That's good. All right, let's go. You did this darn list, so let's talk about all of them. What?
No, I just remembered, if we're going to talk about one, why was I talking about those awards if I wasn't going to mention a book that won an award?
Please.
All right, so I chose the one that won the Penn Bellwether Prize.
All right.
And the book's called The Leavers. Mm-hmm. It actually, it's pub dated May 2nd, but it's actually out already.
Okay.
The woman's name, Lisa Coe, and it is, the Bellwether Prize was founded by Barbara Kingsolver. And it is a novel that is rewarded for winning for social. It's a social issues novel prize.
Mm.
And it has to be a first novel.
Mm.
And so what Lisa Coe wrote is a book, very timely book, about a mother and son who are both Chinese. And when she comes over to the United States, has her son, is working in a nail salon, and she is an undocumented immigrant who gets rounded up and sent back to China and leaves her son behind and winds up the son is staying with her boyfriend, and her boyfriend's sister winds up bringing him into social services where he gets given up to adoption by a family in a college town. And so the story then goes back and forth from that time to later on when they try to contact each other again. It's really advanced reads are terrific. I just gave it to a high school teacher who I work with a lot, Kelly, who has taken on some books that I think it's a good book for a high school student,
mm-hmm.
She'll get behind it, and kids wind up reading it, you know, both in and out of class. And I just know this is a great crossover book for high school students.
Very intriguing.
It does such a good job.
It's The Leavers, Lisa Coe, K-O. Am I right?
Yes, that is perfect.
That's perfect.
So
Homegoing.
So
coming in paperback.
Any second. Well, next week. So this is a book that I really love. It's also a prize winner. It won the John Leonard Prize, which is given out by the National Book Critics Circle for first novels. That was a really great shortlist. I had read like three of the six books. And so I didn't really know which one I wanted to win, but I'm very happy that this book won. I think I might have mentioned it in hardcover, but I'm so excited about this book in paperback that I wanted to bring it up again. It is and it's also good for the what to read after you read The Underground Railroad, because it's another take on the legacy of slavery, but it's very different. It's about two half-sisters in Ghana, one of whom is sold into slavery in the United States, and the other one is married off to a white officer and winds up staying in Ghana. And it follows their generations chapter after chapter, like first one child, then the other, then the grandchild, then the other. It has it kind of all links together at the end. So, but one of those books with lots of characters, like Evicted or Janesville, but you don't get mixed up. I didn't even really need the cast of characters. She does such a good job bringing them to life. It also sort of maybe works as you could almost see them as discrete stories, though they are connected. I do love connected stories.
Yeah,
so
that sounds great too.
So
good. What's your favorite underdog?
Oh,
your underdog favorite.
Yes, I love this writer. I have loved him for a long, long time. His name is Don Lee. He wrote a book called Yellow a number of years ago, which was interconnected short stories, because I love interconnected short stories, about a group of Asian Americans and all different kinds of nationalities doing all different kinds of things. And it was sort of a take on cultural identity. He's written lots of different kinds of books. He wrote like his college novel. He wrote a thriller that actually won Best First Novel for Edgar. And then he wrote this book that I completely fell in love with called Rack and Rune, which was a comic novel that I used to call combined to Sideways. And his new book is a music novel.
Music.
It's a music novel, and it is about a struggling musician. And he actually has songs in the book, and he's going to be in conversation with the songwriter.
Oh,
so,
nice.
Just It's funny. It's smart. It's just a great book, and it's about the alt-country world.
Oh. So. We'll put Daniel's list on our Facebook page, and it's on his Boswell site as well. Happy Independent Bookstore Day. Thanks for being here. Really, thanks for everything.
Likewise.
Yeah. Daniel Golden, who's the owner of Boswell Books. If you've never been there, it's just wonderful. And he does so much to bring authors here and get people reading. And he does it with his heart and his head, and it's good. It's good. Thanks very much to the producers of this program. And, oh, it's Natalie Guyette. I've had many producers coming and going, but now people are here. But thanks to Natalie, and thanks to Colleen Leahy for on-air production here in Milwaukee.